This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Awesome Woodies, the original portable hangboard company. Awesome Woodies portable hangboards are the absolute ultimate warm-up companion for you at the cliff. If you're warming up for your boulder or sport climbing project, this is the extra tool to have. It's a game changer. It gets you absolutely ready to bear down and crush. It's going to keep injuries at bay because your fingers are ready to just hit the gas and the red point button. For your climbing gym or for at home, Awesome Woodies also make the Homeboy fingerboard. They've also got pinch blocks to help you with your twofer projects, the elephant balls, campus rungs, sloper rails, everything's there. Jump onto their website, awesomewoodies.com, throw in discount code BAFFLEDAYS, and you're going to get yourself 15% off as well. And they just are the best. I've used plenty of the other ones out there on the market, and they just don't quite compare to what Ross is making up there in Brisbane. They're Australian made, Australian owned, made from local plantation timber. It's all just kicking goals for everyone. So head on over to awesomewoodies.com, discount code BAFFLEDAYS, and you're going to get yourself a sweet deal on some sweet, sweet product. Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the BAFFLEDAYS podcast. I'm your host, Tom O'Halloran. Today's chat is with John Sheridan. Amanda, Audrey and I had a little family vacation down to Canberra recently, and we jumped at the opportunity to sit down and have a chat with John Shero. He's a bit of a climber, but primarily he is a powerlifter. He runs a strength training gym and in the last couple of years has discovered climbing. So it was really great to take the opportunity to sit down and have a chat with Shero. It was good to hear his perspective on strength training as an ex-strongman, powerlifting, absolute weapon. So it was cool to pick his brain a bit about some strength training ideas and just the place that strength training has in our life outside of performance and how important that is. It really is something that we should all be doing just to keep ourselves fit and healthy. It's not even about improving performance, it's improving quality of life. And from there, we chat about pushing comfort zones mentally and physically. And Shero found this when he came from being an expert in his weightlifting into climbing. He kind of had to take a step back and go, whoa, okay, cool, I'm a beginner again, and had to learn this entirely new skill set. And I found it a bit the same when I started getting into strength training. It was the opposite. And also for my speed climbing as well. And we chat about that, just how important it is to take a step back and be a beginner again and learn a new skill and learn the love of learning something new. Shero also does have a podcast on strength training, so if you want to check that out, it's called Peak Speak. It's got a little burger as the podcast album art. Check that out. So there's heaps of episodes there talking all about strength training. So if you've got any sort of questions around that, there's probably an episode in there that covers it. He runs Burley Strength in Canberra. It's a strength powerlifting gym. It's just around the corner from Blockhouse, Canberra. So if you're down there, if you're a local, if you want to pass on through, go check out his gym as well. It's super awesome. Everything there. Get you nice and strong. And if you're traveling through and need a bit of a session, hit him up. I'm sure he'll be psyched to see you. We begin our conversation with Shero chatting about the last strongman competition he did. It sounds pretty horrendous. Let's get into it.
Maybe it was in somewhere up near Sydney. We drove all the way up and pushed a truck on wet grass. That was really unpleasant.
So no grip. No, and it's sogging into the grass.
So I knew it was going to be on grass, so I took my footy boots with me because I was still playing rugby at the time. So that definitely helped. But yeah, I haven't competed in strongman for a while. Now I've got all the toys, I find it still painful to train for because it just involves moving a lot of crap and loading a lot of crap and moving it all around. So, yeah, it's a fun idea in theory. It's less fun in practice.
I think not a lot of climbers, but I know quite a few climbers in Blackheath that look at the strongman stuff. There's one in particular I can think of that just loves the look of the strongman stuff.
It looks really cool. It's definitely a much more entertaining sport to watch than powerlifting.
Yeah.
Like I've now been involved in powerlifting for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's the most boring spectator sport in the world.
Yeah.
Because it's just the same three things over and over and over and over and over. It's great. Like I like watching my lifters and my friends compete and do those sort of things in powerlifting, but I will never watch powerlifting recreationally.
Can you explain what powerlifting is actually?
Yes.
Because I've never been clear.
So,
on it.
It's not in the Olympics. The barbell will never go over your head. So powerlifting is, which are they're the two most common ones you get. Like, oh, what's power? Is it the-?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's not. So it is a sport that involves the squat, the bench press, and the deadlift. Each lifter gets three attempts at each lift to lift the heaviest possible weight. So generally you'll start a little bit light and add a little bit with each attempt. Your highest successful attempt from each of the three disciplines is added up to a total and highest total wins.
Yeah.
It's done in weight classes, obviously, because it's a little bit unfair for me at 130-odd kilos to compete against you guys. there's a certain element of size and strength that goes hand in hand.
So the bigger you are, the stronger you are at powerlifting generally?
Like, yes, very generally. Obviously, at a certain point, you can't contract fat. The area of powerlifting that I have been the most competitive in is referred to as equipped lifting, which I think I showed you guys the suits and stuff when you were down here for the high performance seminar. So it's, and I can show you afterwards, they're in the cupboard over there because I'm not allowed to have them at home. so yeah, it's like an offshoot, so to speak, where you get to use a bunch of specialist equipment that allows you to lift more weight. I liken it to the difference between high jump and pole vault. Yep. So both, in essence, would test how high you can jump. One, you just get to use a bit of equipment that makes you jump higher. And not all good high jumpers are good pole vaulters and vice versa. And
so are they like wraps for the bar and like knee braces?
Yeah, so it's I'd wear like knee wraps and then a squat suit.
Yep.
So the suit's like several layers of industrial polyester that like if you want to get altered, I used to go to a guy who did boat sails because he had the right gauge needles to punch through this polyester. And I'll show you it afterwards. It's intimidating to look at. But
so it's like this massive gusset that you put on your whole body.
Yeah, it's like a big suit. It used to take me like 10 minutes to get into it.
Yeah.
Then it essentially stores elastic energy, right? It's just polyester, so it stretches as you go. And then you get to the bottom of your squat and that rebound helps you then stand up again. So it's like, it's not magic. Without a squat suit at my strongest was probably squatting in the 240, 250 range. Wow. With the suit, I squatted 410 was my heaviest successful squat. And I attempted a bit more than that, but was never successful. But it's a different ball game, you know, like it adds a layer of technical skill and precision to an otherwise already fairly technical and precise sport. Not everyone gets into it. It's very much a dying art these days, but, in that instance, fat's kind of useful.
Yeah.
Because being a little bit fatter means you can squeeze into a smaller suit because fat squishes better than muscle does. Yeah. So there was an element of that. Nowadays, powerlifting has evolved a little bit and the people in powerlifting tend to be more jacked because the more muscle you have, the more contractile potential you have. So there's definitely an element of the bigger you are, the stronger you are. But it varies depending on a whole range of factors, really. But it's in weight classes because that's what makes it kind of fair is, having the ability to separate people based on what they weigh.
How much? So you've got a son. How old is he?
I do. He is we worked out this morning, 22 months. He's 22 months. In March.
And so what weight class of powerlifting is he in at the moment?
Well, the smallest weight class in the men's is the under 56s. Which,
under 56 kilos.
Yeah. which is like a big climber is my understanding. so technically he would be in the under 56s. Someone's put his name on our record board at the gym because we've never actually had a male that weighed 56 kilos train here. So we don't have any
records. So technically he does hold the record.
Technically no, because he hasn't actually done it in competition, which is the only way to do a record. If I'm going to be a stickler for the rules for everyone else, I feel like I should probably be a stickler for my own son so as not to be accused of bias. He hangs out here, has a great time. Yeah. I got a couple of videos of him picking up a 4 kilo med ball the other day and hurling that around, which is cool to watch. And it's, you know, it's cool to know that he'll grow up in the environment that I have now shaped my life around, that I didn't really get involved in until I was 13 or 14. He'll have a significant head start on what I had.
Yeah.
What's the allure of strength training?
So I got into it in high school. I was like, I think it was 14 and a half was the cutoff. So I went to grammar in Canberra and we had a gym at school. And at 14 and a half, you're allowed to start using the gym to train in. And so that was the thing you did. We all played rugby, I played rugby at the time. So my goal was always to just be better at playing rugby. Mm-hmm. It was to improve performance there. So I'm now 31. So I've been lifting weights in some form or another for the better part of like 15 or 16 years, and pretty consistently for the most part. So initially it was around performance. It was about being better at the sport that I played. I've always been a pretty big guy. Like in 10 years of rugby, I played 3 positions and that was 1, 2, and 3 in the front row.
Loose head prop, tight head prop and hooker.
Yeah. And I loved it. I still love rugby. I just don't play it anymore.
Yeah, Tom played rugby.
Yeah, awesome.
I was in the backs though. Yeah. I've never been.
I never would have picked
that. To picture you two playing in the same team or against each other. Yep, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Tom looks like a stick.
I could drop the big boys though.
By tripping them over.
Yeah, you can't run without legs. It's a cliche for a reason. that was where it started, which I think for a lot of people, especially a lot of men, it starts in a gym for aesthetic reasons. Like I just want to be bigger and look better and those sort of things. I've never really trained like that. I've always been an athlete in one form or another and trained for performance. It's now just part of my identity and who I am as a person. You know, it's my happy place, much like I'm sure the Crag is for you guys. Yeah. It's the place I go when I'm feeling shit because I know I'll feel better afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's now how I make a living, so it really is a significant portion of my life, and it's something I'll do forever. I think in one form or another, I will continue to do some form of strength training for the rest of my life.
That's something. So that's a good segue into what I wanted
more
to
about
ask
the
you
professional
about.
Professional segues in
podcast hosting. So when we did the performance workshop together, one of the things that we were talking about was. I guess your 70-year-old that comes to the gym and comes and works out here. And so, for us, we train because for performance and because we're athletes, but also I think as you start to get older, you realize that it preserves your health, your mental health, your body, everything. So, what do you think about that?
Yeah, look, I said it on the day, the stronger you are, the harder you are to kill.
Yes.
Every bit of science in this realm points towards some conclusion that comes very close to saying strong people die later.
Yep.
They measure things like hand strength and leg strength and all these things, and it's across the board correlated with decreased mortality rates. The way I phrase it to most people is like the most important thing is about being active, because at a certain point in life, you're going to start deteriorating physically, and the longer you can, or the more you can prolong that, the better. Because at that point, you're then less likely to fall, because everyone falls eventually. And ultimately, the thing that kills you is you fall and you break a hip and you end up in hospital and you get an infection and you die. Like I think it's after 70, it's something like broken hips are 50-50 on whether you'll live.
I look after 5 different nursing homes in the Blue Mountains. most people are there, they're either Alzheimer's dementia patients or they've had a fall.
Yeah.
And they have a fall, go to hospital, lose their independence because they're stuck in a hospital room, hate the food, lose five to 10 kilos, get depressed, lose their appetite, then they find themselves in a nursing home.
Lift weights, everyone, lift weights. And that's and not only are you then like you're more coordinated, you're less likely to fall over, like your bone density is higher.
Yeah.
So you're then less likely to break the hip when you do fall because eventually everyone falls.
If your car breaks down, you can push it.
I did that in the car park just the other day. A woman backed down in front of me and her car wouldn't start. And I was like, do you want me to just push it back into the thing? She, oh, can you?
You can hill start by pushing it up the hill.
No, I'm actually also very lazy. Despite being quite strong and enjoying physical training, I do it because I'm very lazy. And I often joke, like I'm in on the joke that is... you know, the thing I do for gratification stems from the fact that my physical life is so easy that I need to come to a place and do fake work to feel physically gratified about myself. I'm under no illusions as to this being some sort of hardcore thing that makes me better than other people or anything like that. I just like lifting weights. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, there was a really funny Dylan Moran thing where he talks about Arnold Schwarzenegger, where he's just like, this guy's just gotten really famous because he just lifts it up and puts it back down.
Yep.
He just lifts it up and puts it back down.
He looks
it just
really seems like, good doing it though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's different in that realm because it's about looking good. Like that's, yeah. I have a lot of respect for people who are competitive bodybuilders. I have very little respect for people who claim they're bodybuilders but actually just want to look good in a mirror, because you're not a bodybuilder in my books until you've got the tan on and you're in your G-string on the stage. In the same way that you're not a powerlifter until you've competed in powerlifting. Like just because you guys are doing squats and bench and deadlift doesn't mean you're a powerlifter.
Yeah. I didn't know I could call myself that.
Well, you definitely can. You
have
can call
to
yourself
add that to my Instagram.
Amanda, the great thing about identity is you can do whatever you like.
That's true.
But... The level of commitment that comes with being a competitive, especially a very high level competitive bodybuilder, is unparalleled, I think, in athletics across the world, because it's a 24/7 job. You know, when they get to the point where they're watching like micronutrient content to make sure they flush enough salt out so they're dehydrated enough to look perfect on stage, like it takes a lot of work. I have no desire to do it.
No.
Because I genuinely couldn't care less about getting all fake tanned up and standing on a stage in front of other people.
In a G-string.
Yeah. Well, that'd mostly it'd just be funny. but yeah, so I've always trained for the performance end of things, and I think it's always made more sense to me, and that's certainly what has shaped my coaching philosophy. And the philosophy is that of the gym is that first and foremost, we're a strength gym. We put strength in the name of the place so that it's the key characteristic. It's the thing that, and I said it at that seminar, it's the thing that I think underpins physical performance across the board. And what that looks like will be very different for someone like me who's, you know, very moderately average climber and someone who likes to just lift weights for fun versus someone who's training for high performance and pursuing something in a different realm. It all looks different, but the key element is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's become something like far bigger in my training programs in the last couple of years, is understanding how functional strength training can be and like the direct correlation in performance. And it seemed funny, but I never thought that lifting weights and doing that kind of stuff was actually going to make my climbing stronger.
Yeah.
But having that strength that you can only get really from lifting up something heavy or pushing something heavy or whatever.
Yeah, and that ability to strain through a level of tension and pressure that you'll never experience, even on the steepest overhanging tiny crimps.
Yeah.
You're never going to experience the same amount of whole body pressure and tension that comes from a max effort deadlift.
Yeah.
Because of the external resistance you're using, because of all that load that you're adding to it. So I think you can, not only is it good from a performance standpoint in terms of you're stronger so you can pull harder on small holds and that sort of thing, but also just the awareness and improvement in overall like proprioception, and you know, your ability to know where you are in space, I think is something that, especially if like a lot of the people I've seen who are pretty good at climbing, and obviously I'm not exposed to the same level of climbers as you guys are, but a lot of them aren't very athletic.
Yeah.
Like they're people who got into climbing perhaps because it seemed like a fun thing to do, and actually there seems to be a significant population of nerds in climbing, which has always been really interesting. Because yeah. It seems to, like, it's not like a traditional sport like rugby where you get all the jocks in school who yeah. grew up as athletes. Like, I've been an athlete my whole life. I'm 31 and I've done something like 23 years of competitive sport. Mm. There's a lot of climbers I see who, like, would tear me to pieces in a climbing competition, but they just have a very, very specific awareness to where they are in space in reference to a wall and not in reference to the greater world. You know, you watch them walk and they're all...
I know, it's funny. Like, I can picture a couple of them.
Yeah.
Like, and, yeah, a friend in particular in the water at the beach. It's, yeah.
Yeah, you look like not maybe a you're a brick.
Space. Yeah. Yeah, not a natural space.
No, and that and that's where I think... And I see it here all the time. You know, we get everyone from elite level competitive strongman, international competitors, through to everyday mums and dads who just want to be a bit fitter and healthier and happier. And I can tell the difference in someone's background by how they walk through the door. Mm. You know, I can see an athlete when they walk through the door. Canberra's great because you can pick the military guys as well.
Yeah.
Or walk through the door looking exactly the same. Mm. But I think from that standpoint, if all you've ever been exposed to in an athletic sense is one dimension, then having the ability to explore all these other areas of performance is really important.
Mm.
You know, like, that's how my son's going to grow up, is playing a whole bunch of different sports to develop athletic prowess across all aspects of physical performance. Then if he wants to be really good at something, sure, when you're like 15, we can pursue that one thing. But until that point, you should learn all of them.
Yeah, that's what we've often talked about, because Tom and I were both immersed in a lot of sport.
Yeah.
Like, I played competitive sport from a really young age.
Yeah, me too.
And big variety of competitive sport. Like, you know, if netball season wasn't on, it was a little athletics or it was t-ball or softball or...
Yeah, I played soccer, I played rugby, I swam, I then competed in lifting weights. Like, there's been something I've been training for basically my whole life.
Yeah.
I think the mindset that comes with training for it, and the idea that you're trying to improve your performance, not just ticking a box, I think is really important. And yeah, I think you can develop a lot of skill that isn't just weight on the bar. You know, that doesn't have to be the only measure of your progress, nor really should it be for someone like you who, like, whether you squat 100 or 110 is not going to be the difference between Olympic medals
or 70.
Not. Yeah. we can work on that. But it's understanding where it fits into the training process, I think, is the important part.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to look like what it does for a powerlifter, and that's okay. I think a lot of people especially in strength and conditioning, get a little too pigeonholed in the thing that they do best. You know, like, I predominantly coach powerlifters and strongman competitors, but that doesn't mean I can't coach anyone else, because the principles are the same regardless, right? Like, we have a podcast, I have a podcast called Peak Speak that is predominantly about powerlifting, but most of the discussions we have are discussions that apply in the broader picture to every aspect of physical performance, because it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the purpose of strength training, as you were saying before, it's, you know, the stronger you are, the harder you are to kill, and all those benefits that we were talking about before, the bone density is better and your muscles are stronger and all the benefits that sit there. And strength training is becoming a lot bigger part of the climber's training program, even just a recreational climber.
Like, I watched Adam Ondra bench press on YouTube the other day.
Yeah.
Holy fuck, it was bad.
Yeah.
He needs to contact you.
not even that. Just, like, he's a great example of a dude who's he looks more comfortable on a wall than he does. Like, they showed a clip in that episode. They showed a clip of him sprinting.
He's a goober.
He's so uncoordinated.
Yeah.
Because he's grown up running vertically.
Yeah.
And on overhangs and stuff. He's a great example of someone who it's not going to be the difference between him winning gold and not winning gold, but it might be the difference between him pushing levels of performance he hasn't done before 5 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that strength training in general is becoming more accepted in the wider community, and is becoming, like, more people realize now the value in being healthier and being stronger and fitter and stuff like that. And I think sport is more and more opening up to the idea that, like, yeah, this is the piece that holds it all together.
Mm. Yeah.
Just a specific question about that. I mean, I did a strength session yesterday and there's a probably 58-year-old woman next to me doing one knee on the bench with like a 1 or 2 kilo dumbbell, you know, doing the tricep
kickbacks. Yes. Ooh, it's all about that tone.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say to her.
A reduction of tuck shop arm.
Attempted, probably.
That's the theory, yeah.
But I just wanted to, I wanted to take the weight out, put a heavy weight in and tell her to just do three or just less.
Like do some squats.
Yeah.
Like it's one of those things that my coaching philosophy revolves around pick the low-hanging fruit and pick the low-hanging fruit that is relevant to your training goals. In general, heavier is better. More muscles is better. So like big compound movements, multi-joint movements are going to be better than it's like Tom's got no fucking need to do tricep kickbacks at all. Like at any point, you don't really need to train your triceps, right?
Yeah.
If you were going to, you'd be doing like dips or like muscle up transitions and things like that where it's really specific to what you're doing.
More functional. So we're more within your realm of your sport.
Unfortunately, the word functional has been thrown around so haphazardly in the strength and conditioning industry that it's almost irrelevant anymore, I think. without adding the caveat that functional means what you're doing.
Yes.
Like functional to what you are trying to
specificity,
achieve.
Specificity.
That's a much better word.
Yeah.
Mm. I got a new pair of Sportivas a while ago, which my first pair of like properly aggressive shoes. And I put a post up on Instagram about functional footwear. And like I'm a huge proponent of not wearing shoes. My kid wears minimal, super flexible shoes and will for his entire life. A rock climbing shoe is the antithesis of a functional shoe. But actually, when you look at it, it's super functional for the specific job that it has, which is to help you actually put pressure through your toes and do all those sort of things. So functional, is a word that gets thrown around a lot. Because at 70, at 60, at 70, functional is getting up off the toilet. Like, can you get up and down off the ground?
Yeah.
Can you get up and down off the ground without using your hands?
Yeah.
It's things like I one of the things I like to do at workshops and stuff just because it loosens everyone up a bit is I get everyone to sit down and I say, okay, everyone's gonna put your hands on your head and get up. Some people do it, some people really struggle, and then you sit back down again, you go, okay, cool, but now you can't do it the same way, you've got to find a new way to do it. And we spent like 10 minutes just playing around with it, and it's this way of thinking about moving that I think a lot of people just never really consider.
Yeah,
you kind of go through your life mindlessly moving through a bunch of stuff, and all the gym, especially for someone like that woman, all the gym is an ability to improve your awareness for day-to-day life. And when you're pursuing performance, it's obviously a little bit different. But if you just want to be fit and strong and healthy, then it should be improving your life. And fuck, you can do as many tricep kickbacks as you want. It's probably not going to
help you get off the toilet. No. It's interesting. I wish that there was a way to get people to be able to physically experience nutrition in the same way that you can do. Like, because
it's much harder.
Like for me, I feel a vague level of anxiety for most people I know about their knowledge of nutrition, the crap that they believe from the internet, and their ability to apply any knowledge that they have.
Yeah.
Because I get to see the end of life. Like I work with, I mean, most people, I work in sports nutrition, but, you know, a lot of people I see are coming to me because they're unwell because of things they've done to their body. Not moved enough, eaten poorly, drunk too much alcohol, for example.
And beer is delicious though.
Yeah, beer has a place. And if there
several
was... several places in your belly. If there was something I could get them to do so they could actually connect with why you don't want to eat bacon every day, you know?
Yeah. I have heard it. One of the best general nutrition strategies I've ever heard. It's a guy named Matt Vincent from the States. He runs a company called Hate Brand Goods. He's an ex-Highland Games athlete. His like nutrition rules are if it grew in the ground, you can identify it as one ingredient or it had a face, it's probably okay to eat. I was like, oh, actually, yeah, that's like...
Twisties. Some twisties have faces.
Maybe. Yeah. Take the right drugs first.
Yeah.
And look, that's the thing about... It's why I've been so fascinated by coaching strength and preaching the idea that everyone should be lifting weights. Mm. You know, and ultimately, now I have a son, he's just my lifelong test case to prove my idea that if you just like squat heavy once a week for 10 years, you'll probably be pretty strong. I'm going to start that about two, just once a week.
Just what weight are you going to start him at?
Well, he can already pick up a 4-kilo ball, so we'll start around there and we'll work our way up.
Sweet.
Yeah, he'll be jacked by the time he's in high school. It's going to be great.
Kicking down doors.
Yeah. Well, look, I got picked on a lot as a kid because I was always a fat kid. And it's only as a more mature adult that I can look back on the decisions I made to get into training and stuff like that and know that like what I thought I was doing was pursuing performance and building this physical armor for playing rugby, but actually what I was doing was building a physical armor for the shit that I copped for being a fat kid.
Mm.
And now I just don't care. Like now I'm confident enough in who I am that there's pretty much nothing you can say to me that I haven't already thought about myself. Mm. And so it's fine. But the level of confidence and self-belief that comes from seeing someone or watching people develop this through doing things they never thought they could do before.
Mm. I had it, definitely had that experience after having a baby.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was climbing really well, always, you know, competed pretty well and could do mostly what I wanted. And if I couldn't, it was because my head was letting me down,
yep.
Not my body.
Way and harder then, to train that.
Yeah, very, very much.
Extremely then, confronting.
Yeah. Then had, that's a whole other week, lot of podcasts. Yeah, then had 26-hour labor and a cesarean.
Yeah, you can fucking do anything after that.
Oh, my God. Like, I couldn't stand in the shower. I had stood in the shower for a minute and ended up in so much pain and tears. Tom had to bring one of those plastic white chairs into the shower. Yeah. And then just that, this feeling like that proprioception thing you were saying, when you've climbed for a long time, and I'd been climbing for, I don't know, 18 years or 19 years when I had Audrey, you've just got this sense, this just, yeah, instinct on the wall.
Yeah.
And when you've had your middle cut.
Yeah, yeah.
And that.
You've cut the chain.
Yeah. And it was a lot. I think my first year of climbing again after her was, a lot of it was just this shock feeling the whole time and trying to recalibrate and relearn. And so the weight training for me was about feeling strong, like so that when I'm just walking around, I feel strong.
Yeah.
And so that I'm less able to be killed.
Yeah, exactly.
And as a mum, I don't want to be easy to for be sure. killed.
For sure. I had a particularly profound moment a couple of weeks ago where I walked into Blockhouse just on like a Wednesday night or something like that. And I walked in, I saw a woman halfway up the wall, and she's a woman that I started coaching before we moved here. So it would have been like 2015. She came to the gym because she wanted to get a bit stronger. She'd had knee surgery and a really horrible rehab process that like it got infected. She couldn't walk up and downstairs without pain. She like ended up competing in a powerlifting comp within a couple of years. She had deadlifted like 100 or more than 100. She like got very strong for a woman who's in her 40s, has two kids, is a full-time mum and works a full-time job as well. And she kind of drifted away, as people do in this sort of environment. But I still very distinctly remember the day she came in and was like, I walked down a set of stairs today and it didn't hurt.
Mm.
Like I will remember that. Like it gives me goosebumps thinking about it. Mm. But I'll remember that moment for the rest of my life.
I need to play this podcast to lots of people that aren't going to listen to it for athletic reasons.
Yeah.
Because they need to. So many people are like, oh, I just can't do much because I've got so much pain in my knee. And it's like, oh.
Yeah, my body feels so much better when I'm lifting and training hard than it ever does when I'm not.
Yeah, when you're resting.
Which is so counterintuitive. Yeah. And I think this is the benefit in the strength training stuff is that you think, oh, I hurt, so I'm going to stay away from doing that movement or that kind of exercise or whatever
it is. My legs hurt from squatting, so I'm just going to do more squats is actually my approach.
Yeah. It's so, like, there's such a bigger picture to all of that stuff. It's like, it's not about needing to be able to pick up 100 kilos.
No.
It's about having the pathways in your body and the coordination, as you were talking about before, and all those sort of things going on to actually make it something that is a really functional use for your life, or really just, you just feel good doing it. Your body is better, you're healthier.
Yeah.
Like, and generally when you're doing that stuff, you get better nutrition stuff going on and everything. And you've got a purpose as well. I think that's a big part of what a lot of people like about climbing is it gives them a bit of purpose and structure.
It's something to train towards. It's the same reason I encourage a lot of people who come here just for everyday health and fitness to consider competing in powerlifting at some point. There's a lot of value in pushing towards a tangible goal. I also think there's a lot of value in pushing well beyond your comfort zone. And like for me, climbing's been a really great highlight. Fact, I am, for those of you that haven't seen me before, the antithesis of a good build for a climber. I'm like 175, 176 centimeters, like 135 kilos. And I've got short arms and legs. gravity is not my friend.
And the beard. The beard's got to be adding.
That adds performance on all scales. It has also saved me a lot of money on razors in the last
Gillette's gone under.
I haven't bought a razor in like nearly a decade. But yeah, for me it was, I got very, very good at moving straight up and down in a line and I got very comfortable at it. I'll never really get under a heavy squat for the rest of my life and be scared. It just doesn't scare me anymore because I've done, like I've pushed the edge of that.
Yeah,
I get on some of the weird positions in like reds and purples, which are, you know, relatively low level climbs, and it terrifies me. But I love that because I've realized as I've matured that actually like everything in life should be a little bit scary.
Yeah.
I think a really heavy squat's actually an excellent analogy for how you should approach life. It should be a little bit scary. Maybe terrifying because that's how you know you're pushing the boundaries of what you're capable of. And that's where growth happens. You know, that's how you continue to grow as a human is you push the boundaries of what you're comfortable with. And being scared's okay. Like I actually really want you to be scared. I'm sure it's the same with climbing. I've climbed on real rock on a rope once and it terrified me. At Nowra on like what is a pretty easy slabby climb, I was terrified. But I kept going because it's like it's heaps of fun.
Yeah.
And just because you're scared of something doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like fear is a very innate, fundamental human response to danger. But that doesn't mean that you should avoid fear and danger at all costs.
Yeah.
That's how you confront things. You know? I own my own business. I'm raising a child. And both of those things terrify me every day. But I keep doing it because that's how you improve as a person. And I think a lot of people really lack that in modern society and like less so perhaps the sort of people that listen to podcasts like this who are already perhaps into that area of things and pursuing performance in some aspect. But if you're just working a 9-to-5 that you've worked the same job for 5 years and all you do is go home and drink beers on the weekend and do that sort of stuff, you're just in this little comfort bubble that you'll never really go beyond. I think you can learn a lot.
I think those climbers, you're kind of at risk of you know, like we find ourselves at a bit of a crux in life at times. I think we're in one now where you can look at your life and think, well, it looks quite different to 9-to-5.
Yeah.
Monday to Friday, we push ourselves. We've got a lot in there. But there's still this, we're still being safe.
Yeah.
You know, you're still sticking to things that aren't working.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, that's a really good advice for us that we need to listen to from you right now. And I think our drive home from Canberra will be filled with that kind of conversation of, okay, we just got to pull the trigger.
Look, to be honest, the history of the gym that is now Burley Strength, for 2 years, it was called PTC Canberra, Performance Training Centre Canberra. It was owned by a guy in Sydney and I ran it for him. He paid me to run it. He approached me at the end of 2013, that would have been like August 2013, approached me to run the gym that he wanted to open. And I said yes immediately. I did not consult my girlfriend. In hindsight, that was both the best decision I made and the worst decision I made. I copped a lot of shit for it, as I rightly deserved. But the thing that it did was like I just committed to it because I wasn't going to say no to an opportunity like that, you know. And I think some people see that as luck. Like I was lucky to know that guy and know who he was through the community and have established a bit of a rapport with him. Sure, that was there was an element of luck to that, but also I had the cojones to say yes.
Mm.
And I did the same thing when he came to me and said, "Hey, I want to get out. I'm going to sell the gym. Great, I'll buy it." Like, not, "Oh, maybe I'll buy it." Like, "I will definitely buy it. Everything else I'll just work out on the fly."
Mm.
I'm fortunate, I think, to be fairly risk tolerant when it comes to a lot of things like that. Which is nicely mellowed by my girlfriend's significant aversion to risk. So we make quite a good team. I've always been very much a like, "Well, fuck it, let's just see what happens."
Yep.
Which I think definitely helps. But I've also made a lot of mistakes. You know, I've now owned the gym for 4 years. This is our fifth year. I feel like I just finished an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
You know, like I, and
as a business owner, I understand.
Yeah. Like I still don't know that much. Mm. I know just enough to get by and not a lot else. And I've learned a lot in the last 4 years by doing a lot of things that didn't work, by doing a lot of things that did work and everything in between. And I think, a lot of that drive, and I can only say this cause I can look back on the decisions I made through training and stuff, but a lot of that drive has come from an ability to push the boundaries of what I'm comfortable with in the gym, which is my safe space. You know, this is the place I go when I'm not happy or when I'm feeling stressed or anxious. Like, I go and train because that's the default. You know, it's meditation of one form or another.
I think that's a big part and something that when we all go to move into something new that feels uncomfortable is looking back on our life and looking at those things that we have done well.
Yeah.
Like, because we're always going to, you know, if we're growing, as you say, and doing stuff that makes us feel uncomfortable, it's scary. But you also go, cool, what did I do that I've, what have I done in the past where I felt uncomfortable or I've risen and done something that I feel really good about?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I pushed myself and...
And it's easy to look back and only see the things you failed.
Mm.
Like I do it all the time. I get caught in the weeds of running a business day to day. And every now and again, I have to actually stop as I walk out that door. Like, I often do it on a Saturday afternoon or a Friday night. I walk out the door, I turn the lights off, and I turn around and go, "Oh yeah, cool. I built this."
Yeah.
Like, that's a really cool feeling that I forget about for months and months at a time. Like, I love what I do. I don't earn a lot of money. I work a lot. It never really leaves my brain because, as you know, owning a business, like, it just doesn't. It's just there all the time. But I wouldn't trade it for the world, you know. Like, most of my family work in the public service.
Yeah.
I'd rather shoot myself in the face. I thought about it the other day. I haven't worn actual shoes since, like, probably the start of December. I've either been barefoot or in thongs since then. And, like, I've been to work 6 days a week the whole time during that period. I wear a t-shirt and shorts to work every day, you know. Like, all these decisions that I've made that are still quite scary when I think about them are the things that have allowed me to live the life that I'm enjoying.
Mm. Yeah.
I get to spend 2 or 3 days a week with my son all day while his mum's at work, you know. That if I worked 9 to 5, that wouldn't happen. I wouldn't get to raise him in that way. And it's... For me, like, it always just seemed logical. Like, these are the decisions I wanted to make for the life that I wanted to live because I didn't feel like I had any weird pressure to earn a bunch of money or do something like that. And sure, you know, we have enough money to make bad decisions with money is the joke that I like to make.
Yeah. That's good measure.
Yeah, like, just enough to make bad decisions and still get by, which, you know, still puts us in a super privileged position.
Yeah.
Mm. And just, yeah, remembering that, like, I chose all of this, and so when it does get really hard, I know that, like, the only person I've really got to blame is myself. And I definitely learned a lot of that willingness to push the boundaries through the physical upbringing, and not just training in the gym, so to speak, but just being an athlete my whole life. I think there's an element of willingness to go beyond what you think is normal that, yeah, is really, really powerful.
Yeah. Mm.
When you've got a team behind you, you've got... I mean, that's the beauty of team sport, I think, is that there's other people that are relying on you, even if you feel like crap.
Yep.
You just got to pull it out. And you just... Yeah, I can picture some netball games that I was a part of and you just fight hard.
Mm.
Doesn't matter how much you hurt. You just do because you want to win for the team. Yeah. And then in climbing for us, it's about working out how to dig really deep.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only way you get up hard routes.
Yep.
Is to go to that next level, which I guess is the same as trying to lift the heaviest weight you've ever lifted.
When you're attempting something you've never done before, regardless of what it is, there's a new level of performance that you have to push towards. I love that moment. For me, it's the moment between the chalk bowl and the platform. Like, that's the moment where nothing else in my life exists except for what I'm about to do.
Do you find that headspace easy to come by?
I can turn a switch on now. Mm-hmm. And like, I have perfected that to the point where I can flick a switch and like, I end up looking like I'm about to murder someone. Because for me, from a mental arousal point, when it comes to lifting heavy, I go to a somewhat angry place.
Mm-hmm.
I am a very relaxed, relatively emotionally stable person, or at least I think I am. So I don't get angry very often because I have that space to go to. Like, I can just take a breath and get through most things. But for me, it's the moment where I've had people walk into the gym and then like just be a bit terrified and unwilling to come and talk to me for a few minutes afterwards. But yeah, I can now flick that switch on.
So I think, because that's an interesting thing I've spoken to a lot of climbers about, and definitely something we're interested in exploring more. And for me, post baby, finding the things that drive me to be able to try really hard and get that headspace, it's harder at the moment, harder. And I haven't found a really easy way to find the steps back to that. So, like, was it just something that came from practice? Was it something you deliberately tried to find?
Or? I would say both. Certainly, there's an element of aggression that comes with playing a full contact sport. That it has always kind of been there.
Mm.
I'm not an angry person. I'm not the sort of person on a rugby field trying to kill someone. But I understand that there's a level of aggression that is beneficial to that area. From a lifting standpoint, it's definitely a ritualistic practice. Mm-hmm. Like, I now, like, I have my song. It's 46 and 2 by Tool. that's my psycho. Like, it still gives me goosebumps just listening to it recreationally. The process that I go through for a deadlift with 60 kilos or 260 kilos is exactly the same. So it's always this establishing a pattern so that when it does get to that high stress point, you don't have to think about it anymore.
Yep.
Like watching Andre act out all the moves to silence before he actually gets on the wall. It's the same idea. It's that establishing a flow state where you can be in that moment doing exactly what you're doing. So it's definitely a practice thing. Over time, it's probably relaxed from a very angry place to a... still, like, angry is just not the right word.
Grumpy.
Intense is probably the better descriptor. Because there's a really weird thing that I do occasionally, not necessarily deliberately, but there's a moment where I deadlift, I get really angry, like my hands are shaking from adrenaline, and there's a bit of ammonia involved, a bit of huffing, smelling salts, which is like a big slap in the face, which is nice. And then I take a breath and I close my eyes, and there's a moment where a really creepy looking smile comes over my face. And for me, it's that reminder, like, in that moment, I chose to be here. I chose to do this. I'm uncomfortable with it, but I'm doing it anyway because I made that decision. And I think there's a lot of power in just remembering that you're in that position because you chose to be and you want to be.
Yep, that's really cool.
Because if you don't want to, then what's the fucking point?
Yeah, might as well go home and watch romantic comedies.
Yep, exactly. Pushing physical performance is really hard. And so at a certain point, if you don't enjoy it or you're not making money from it, then what's the point?
Yeah.
And for me, that's how I got into owning a gym. I started studying exercise science with the view that I would work for the Brumbies. I really wanted to be the strength and conditioning coach for the Brumbies. It was pointed out to me at some point that when you work for a professional sports team like that, what you get is a group of like 30 odd dudes who maybe 5 or 6 of them love training like I do, and the rest are there because it's their job. What I have here is 75, 80 members who pay good money to be here and want to be here and engaged in the process and are willing to learn and willing to listen. And ultimately, I'm my own fucking boss.
Yep.
So if I want to leave early on a Friday night and go and drink a beer, I can do that because I run the joint and I do what I want.
Yeah. And who's going to argue with
yeah,
you?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think there's definitely a practice that goes with it. Some of it kind of came organically. I think some people are better at finding it than others. Definitely people who've grown up with an athletic background. I think men tend to find that easier than women in my experience. Mm.
As a woman, I'd have to agree. I think we just, women are meant to be better multitaskers, which multi-thinkers, we've got lots of thoughts in our heads.
Yeah.
And we're more emotional.
Well, and I also think society has pushed you into a bucket that is small, take up less space, don't be aggressive, all of those sort of things, which is really sad when you look at it from a societal level. But there are women in here that I wouldn't fuck with.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't mean you can't find it, just means you have to look a bit harder for it. But I do think that just remembering why you're doing what you're doing is the really important part.
That's a tricky thing that I find sometimes. You just get into a real kind of like trudging through feeling, and you just like, you've missed what it was that gets you out of bed early because you're psyched to go and just like crush and do it.
Yeah, man.
And it just doesn't happen. And yeah, it's good to reflect sometimes. Sometimes you just need to take a break.
Yep. I got to that point with lifting. So I haven't competed since 2017. My last real comp was like 2015, 16. It became a chore.
Yeah.
I have to go and train today. What's the fucking point?
Yeah.
Like, I'm in a gym anyway. I have to go and train. Climbing saved me.
Yep.
Climbing was the thing that like 2 years ago, a bit over 2 years ago when Blockhouse opened, I only kind of really found out about it because the guy that designed our logo, who's a friend of mine, works for the design company that's doing the work at Blockhouse. And he mentioned it. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And I went once and fucking loved it. And have been going once or twice a week for the last couple of years. And it saved me because it was the thing that was fun again.
Yeah.
Like I got into something that was so different to what I've grown up doing, which is being really tight, moving straight up and down in the shortest distance possible.
And do you think that feeling of being a beginner again?
100%, man. Without a doubt, that, like, I'm really shit. and I really enjoy sucking at something.
Yeah.
Because it's really easy to get better.
Yeah. That's how I find the speed climbing for me.
Yeah.
Like training up for,
you
know, trying to qualify for the Olympics. Speed climbing, you just feel
totally
like a
different ball
goob.
Game. Yeah.
Like it's not a thing. You're just like, this is really frustrating, but also kind of fun to have to start from the beginning again.
Man, there's so much power in being a beginner at something.
Yeah.
Whether it's physical or not, I think the moment you stop learning is the moment you die. And
Amanda's just taking a selfie of this all.
Yeah, hold on. Let's do it this way, because what you can do is actually take it with the 0.5 zoom.
Oh, my goodness. You got four cameras on that?
Three and a flash. Hold on. Which button is it? That one. Yeah, the top one. You'll have to... but you'll have to go not selfie mode. You'll have to go the other way around.
The other way around.
Yeah,
that way.
That way. But go back, because it's a half zoom. It's like a fisheye lens. Yeah, that'll work.
Click.
Or did you press the lock button? We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the new iPhone that takes really nice photos. Oh, no, that was a terrible photo.
We'll have to post that one on Baffle Instagram.
Yeah, that was a really terrible photo. You do it like this. That one might have worked. My hands are too fat. There you go.
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Sorry. You get like a nice fisheye effect. I think there's a lot of power in being a beginner. I think there's a lot of power in learning. I've realized over the last year, I probably let my own pursuit of learning within my craft fall a little bit.
Yeah.
And so that's why there's an anatomy textbook on my desk. I've been re-going over some of this stuff that, you know, I knew, and I'm relearning and I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying learning again. I'm enjoying like choosing to learn, I think, is really powerful as opposed to school, where we kind of get thrown into this bucket of like, hey, you just have to do this work.
Yeah.
Like I always got the, oh, John could do better at school if he tried harder. Yeah, but I didn't want to try harder because it sucked.
Yeah.
It was boring and I didn't like it. But now I have all these things that I really enjoy. And there's a lot, yeah, there's a lot of power in learning. And
did you find studying exercise science a more enjoyable process?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm like officially about halfway through an exercise physiology degree. I ended up transferring into physiology.
Yeah.
I put that on hold. My girlfriend would tell you it's indefinite hold. I would say temporary, extended temporary hold. It got to a point where I realized that between running a business, maintaining a relationship, and then the prospect of raising a child didn't really fit university into that schedule very well.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So it got to a point where I realized like I'm probably intelligent enough and know enough that I could have skated through and got the P's that I needed to get the bit of paper, but that's not why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I don't need the bit of paper to do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I've already got a successful business that doesn't rely on me having an exercise physiology degree. I like the idea of having a degree because it gives me more validity in an area outside of just lifting weights, because a lot of people would see the list of qualifications that I have that is very short, but is very long when you look at the list of athletes that I've coached and done all those sort of things. So I think it's not that I'm doing the bit of uni just to have the bit of paper. It's that I actually want to go and learn. So not being able to do that to the standard that I wanted to was why I put it on hold for a while. But yeah, it also wasn't paying the bills quite like my business does.
Yeah, it's the bummer about study.
Yeah. What's the bummer about formal study?
Yeah.
Because like I can read the same anatomy textbook that I would do use it at university and potentially get a better knowledge base out of it. Mm. It's the paying for that formal study that is harder. But there's definitely more enjoyment in the process when you enjoy the content that you're looking at.
We'd be missing an opportunity to not ask you, like for a climber doing strength training, it's not necessarily, you know, we're not after a list of exercises, but yep. What are we looking for when we're training strength in terms of an approach?
So let me pull up the notes that I used for my talk at Duncan's seminar. I think the most important part is that you understand where it fits in the training cycle and where it fits in terms of its relevance to what you're doing. Like as a climber, you shouldn't suddenly just go to lifting weights 5 days a week,
yeah,
because it's not going to help. I think in that understanding that you're picking the low-hanging fruit, if you're not doing anything, doing something is probably going to help.
Yeah.
One or two sessions a week is probably plenty for most people, especially if you're on the wall multiple times a week already. You don't need to suddenly add 5 days of training. Like we have people that train 5 or 6 days a week, but that's the only physical activity they do.
Yeah.
That's very different to someone who's pulling on rock and plastic all week. Mm. And then to add 2 or 3 extra sessions to that is hard. So I think 1 or 2 sessions a week, picking the low-hanging fruit is the easy option. Working big exercises like squats and deadlifts and overhead presses and big compound movements like that where you get bang for your buck.
So for people, you know, I've done a bit of strength training, but I know that when I first started strength training, when people talked about big compound movements, I was like, okay, that's terminology that...
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't know.
So I forget sometimes that I live in a bubble. Compound means multi-joint. So your tricep kickbacks, the only thing you're training is your tricep, because all you're doing is flexing, extending your elbow. Compound means multi-joint. So squats, your hips and knees and ankles are all moving at the same time. You're stabilizing your core. It's the same for a deadlift. It's the same for an overhead press. It's big, high bang for your buck movements are really the important point. So the way I think about training is not to look at individual muscles or muscle groups, but instead to look at movements and movement patterns, because it's a more cohesive look at how the human body works. Like you said before, it's a functional unit. It's the whole thing together. And especially in a sport like climbing, it relies on your coordination through all 3 axes of movement, through all 4 limbs. So you may as well use exercises that allow you to do that.
Yeah.
Doing a leg press is probably not very useful.
And then there's the terms, you know, like you've got your hinge, your press.
Yeah. Squat, press, pull, hinge, carry.
Yeah.
Would be the 5 that I break down into. So squats is some form of bending your knees, be it a barbell or not. It doesn't really matter. Hinge, so like a deadlift. Press, can be an overhead press, could be a bench press. I don't think bench press has as much relevance for a climber because it's from a fixed scapular position. So a good bench press, you shouldn't really have your shoulder blades moving very much. You're better off doing things like, overhead or weighted push-ups, things like that, where you can get a full protraction, retraction of your shoulder blade. Pullings, you probably do enough pulling in climbing not to really worry about that, be it pull-ups or rows or stuff like that. Potentially doing some like horizontal pulling that you don't necessarily do as much of in climbing. So things like barbell rows and stuff like that are really useful. And then carries, like pick something heavy up and carry
your car.
Yeah, you could carry a car if you really wanted to. Those old school strongman comps where they used to gut cars and they put a harness in it and they put a person in the middle and they like shoulder harness a whole car.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm going to see YouTube.
Like Fred Flintstone kind of
That's 100% what it looks like. But it's like these giant strongman dudes. Yep. Yeah, go on YouTube. It looks really cool. So yeah, carries is, it's the most effective way to be really fucking strong is to pick something heavy up and carry it for an extended period.
Yeah.
We used to throw around the like country strong or farm strong playing footy. Like you go and play the guys from Goulburn and none of them know how to lift weights, but they're all fucking country strong because they've just been throwing bales of hay around their whole life.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for being able to pick up something heavy and carry it a long distance.
Toowoomba Grammar boys were the same in my footy. It was just like, and Ipswich Grammar was a bit the same. Like, you just picked just up country. The country.
Boys. Yeah.
Just like, just proper.
Yeah.
They've been carrying cows.
Yeah. And it's the difference between someone who grew up with a life that's so physically easy that you have to do fake work to feel gratified.
Yeah. Yes.
And someone who grew up in a legitimately hard, physical life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think if you're doing one of something in each of those categories, you're probably in business, especially if you're not already doing anything.
Yeah.
And keeping it simple is really important on that front. Like pick the low hanging fruit, keep it relatively simple and understand that time's on your side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a how strong can I get in 6 weeks, in 6 months. I look at training as a months, years and decades discussion, not a days, weeks and months.
Yeah, it's definitely something that as I've gotten older in my climbing and have climbed for longer, definitely used to be, oh shit, we're going on a trip in 4 months, better train for that. Or there's a comp in, let's go in that comp. You know, it was more reactive, whereas now I've got sort of a view to 6 months, a year, 5 years and 10 years.
Wait until our friend here qualifies for the Olympics, then you start talking about training in quads.
Yeah.
Like that's what, like the proper Olympic sports, that's what they talk about.
Yeah.
They have quadrennial cycles. Yeah. Or they have octuple cycles.
Mm.
Two Olympic cycles. I don't care where you are at this Olympics. I care where you are at next Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, when you start looking at training on a time scale like that, like at 31, I've been lifting weights for over half my life. It is the longest relationship outside of my direct family that I've had. There've been periods of years. Like I had a point where I went 2 years and my squat improved by 2.5% over 2 years. And it wasn't like, half a percent. It was like 0, 0, -5, -7, 0, 2.5. Mm. Like it's not, you go back and look at it now and look at like a 6 week period where you're like, I got a bit sick and life got in the way so I couldn't train. A fucking 6 week period means nothing 10 years from now.
Yeah.
That's a big thing in climbing as well, is like you get to this point where the progress is so minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not in those first few months and maybe years, you know, you outdoors, you might be skipping one or two grades every time you go out.
Yeah.
And indoors is a bit the same, but you hit this point where that love for it has to kind of get you through and it's just like being diligent and just getting through. And as you say, having a look at the bigger picture of it doesn't matter if you don't.
The 2.5% over 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've been banging my head against the wall with, you know, a particular kind of grade level for a few years now. And it's just like, I've really enjoyed it because it's a fun process. And
failure is a far better teacher than success ever will be.
That's what climbing's awesome for then.
Yeah.
Fail so much.
I have so many videos on my phone of me falling off climbs at Blockhouse. But so the way I frame it to people is I talk about the idea of outcome orientation versus process orientation. So outcome orientation is I want to climb grade 32.
Yeah.
Process orientation is, okay, well, I just really like climbing and I want to be a little bit better at climbing every day. So you're doing those little things each time that, and you understand that at some point in your lifetime, you're probably not going to get any better.
Yeah.
You're probably going to start getting worse. So if you don't enjoy the training process and all you're looking at is improving in your performance, then at some point you're going to really hate it.
Yeah.
It's going to really suck and it's going to be really unpleasant. And you're probably going to go through a significant mental breakdown about this thing that is your identity that suddenly you can't do very well anymore.
Yeah.
But if you enjoy the process, you can understand that you can continue to be better for the rest of your life. Just like I'll never squat over 400 again.
Yeah.
At 31 years old, I have squatted the heaviest weight I will probably ever squat again. And I'm totally okay with that because I have a bunch of other goals that I'm working on. And I still enjoy the process. And I've accepted that I could probably get back to that point if I wanted to, but I don't really.
Yeah.
I don't really want to do the work that's involved because I don't enjoy it anymore. And I enjoy other things. And I think the people that I get the best results for are the people that I've seen in this place now get the best results somewhere between 1.5 and 2 years in.
Yeah.
Because they're the people that if you can get through that window, we've got you. That's the hooks are in. You're here for life.
I reckon it's probably the same with climbing.
I think it's the same with just about any aspect of physical performance.
Yeah.
Because you get to that point where it stops being easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It stops just happening every time you turn up. And you actually have to put deliberate, focused effort into what you're doing and improving your processes and improving your skills and all of those things that then that's what adds up to getting you through that barrier.
I've seen
so many people, especially in powerlifting and especially in a sport where there's an element of drug use that is accepted in powerlifting because some people compete in an untested federation. So it's not like the Olympics where you've got one governing body. So in some places, drug use is just an accepted part of the sport. Everyone's their own person, make your own choices. That's fine by me. I don't like drug cheats. I think there's a big difference between the two. But I see a lot of people who get to that point I just start pinning some tests and we'll be sweet and we'll get through that window. And then a year later they disappear.
Yeah.
Because what that was just a little shortcut that got you through that really tough period instead of you having to actually chip away at it and grind through it, which is where that's the fucking fun bit.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, somebody said to me, I was walking with a friend recently and she said, what are your goals for this year? And I had to actually think, I've got a few routes in mind and, some adventures I want to have. But actually, I think more about my year. I sort of have this picture in my mind of what I want to do training-wise, and which training being climbing outdoors as well, because I just see that as an extension of training.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, I get to do that route and that route and that route and go to those places. And then if the goal happens, that's awesome.
Cool, great.
But
if it doesn't, it's not going to ruin it.
Yeah.
The best analogy I've heard about some of this is lots of people have climbed Everest.
Yeah.
Lots of people have written a book about climbing Everest. No one talks about the view.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about the process that got them up the mountain and the steps they took to get there. That's where the good bit is.
Mm.
If all you ever deal with is worrying about the outcome, then I think you're not going to be in it for very long because it'll get hard and you'll be like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to go do something else.
Yep.
Totally.
Yeah, and if that's the thing you want to do, cool.
Totally.
I'm not here to judge you on that. But if you really enjoy it and you really want to be in it for a long time, I think that's the only way to do it.
Yep. And sticking your roots in for, creating the community
or,
becoming a part of the community.
Yep.
And the lifestyle.
We've now had, I'm going to a wedding in a month and a bit that is a couple that met in our gym who've lived in China for several years. We've had a few kids come out of this place. We've created a real community of people who are here forever now. I never have to worry about them leaving because it's about the people you're surrounded by. It's about enjoying the process and the day-to-day grind of it, because if you don't enjoy it, then at some point you'll just leave.
So I guess the one last question, so form, I think, particularly you look at a gym, you look at deadlifting, and the first time I started deadlifting I thought, oh god, I don't want to hurt my back. So people should focus on their form?
Yeah, I think this is a really hard thing to do in this media, But like my general advice is if it feels sketchy, it's probably sketchy.
Yeah.
Your body's probably pretty good at telling you that. Most people who get into lifting early probably aren't strong enough to hurt themselves.
Yeah.
Because you'll stop because it'll feel sketchy before then. There is a lot of value in having someone teach you how to do these things. Mm-hmm.
Start light?
Yeah, reasonably light. There'll definitely be an inflection point where like a little bit of weight helps, but too much weight is too much.
Yeah, doing deadlifts with you when everyone was just trying it with just the bar is kind of hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't
much easier with a bit of weight.
You don't get to get a real feel for where it is and stuff like that. So definitely start reasonably light, add a little bit of weight over time. If you can, find someone to teach you how to do it. If you can't, film it and send it to me on Instagram and I'll give you some tips. But for the most part, keep it relatively simple. And I think, just understand that it's just a slow incremental chipping away. It's not this sudden. And like you're not going to see a one-for-one transfer. You're not going to suddenly start squatting and go from climbing 25 to 28. Like, it just doesn't work like
oh,
that.
Oh, that'd be so amazing.
Yeah, I know it would, wouldn't it?
But
understand that it's the building of the base. Like I talked about it at the climbing thing, I had a triangle of specificity where the bottom of the triangle is the most broadly broad and general training you can do, and lifting weights is firmly in that category for climbing. So understanding where it fits in the process and therefore being able to prioritize it effectively and just know that you just keep chipping away at it over a very long time and you'll probably get there in the end.
And for anyone that wants to get their grandparents involved, did you have a 70-year-old walk through the door recently?
Yeah, we've had a woman do her first powerlifting comp at 72, 71. I'm currently coaching a 62-year-old guy who just set a couple of national and world records.
That's awesome.
In powerlifting. He's like a 67.5 kilo ex sprinter, deadlifted 200, and he's a badass old dude who just, you know, puts a lot of young guys to shame. So yeah, it's never too late. The cliche that the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago or right now, I think really applies to training in general. The sooner you start, the better. It's never really too late. Especially if what you want to do, like it's almost compulsory or should almost be compulsory once you get over 40. But it's not. It's unfortunately, it's changing. Certainly kids like mine who will grow up in this environment, it will change the landscape for sure. But yeah, just start, I think, is the easiest way to do it.
And don't stop.
And that simple thing, like the best training program and training session is the one that you actually get done. So like keep it
simple. And the
simple
one that you'll stick to. Compliance. Yeah. You talked about that with the nutrition.
Yeah.
Beyond anything else, if you can continue doing it, you're enjoying it, you'll continue to make progress.
And you'll get like keep it simple, make it small.
Yeah.
Do it forever. And
and then
you get progress.
Sweet. Life will be good.
And what's our mantra? The stronger you are, the less
harder
killable.
Harder you are to kill.
Yeah. I like that. I think that needs to be on a letterhead.
Yeah,
it's definitely on a lot of t-shirts, but generally the people wearing it don't have the right to wear it because they're not very strong. And generally the people that I've met, and I've met some fucking strong people and some very large humans. I met Hathor Bjornsson, the mountain from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he's like 6 foot.
He's like 6'8", 200 kilos.
Yeah,
wow. Like he's literally a different species. So yeah, my frame of reference for like what big and strong is very different. And what I understand is that people that are actually big and strong don't need to project it in any form other than just existing.
Yeah.
You don't need to wear a t-shirt that says you're hardcore because it's just sort of somewhat evident in your aura.
Whereas my frame would need to wear that t-shirt.
Yeah, you say that, but then you still look a lot stronger than a lot of women your size. So I think you'll be fine.
And where can people find you?
So Instagram and Facebook, you can follow me on Instagram at just Sherro, S-H-E-R-E-R-R-O. Can't spell my own name. Great. You can follow my gym at Burley Strength, B-U-R-L-E-Y Strength on Instagram and Facebook.
And come check it out.
Yeah,
if
you're in Canberra and you want to come lift some weights, we're just around the corner from Blockhouse, which is why I frequent there. I do that. I do a bit of online coaching stuff and things like that as well. Yeah. I also have a podcast called Peak Speak.
It's got a burger
It does have a burger.
As the Instagram picture.
Thomas, my co-host, and I are what I would consider to be burger aficionados. Because burgers are the superior form of food.
Well, they are. They've got a bit of protein, a bit of carbohydrate, and some veg.
And they're so versatile.
They are.
So, yeah, you can listen to that. It's certainly more orientated towards powerlifting, but I think a lot of the discussions and principles apply across the board.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Excellent. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, mate. Great.
Thanks so
much.
That
was awesome.
Excellent.
Thanks for listening in, folks. That was a pretty awesome chat we had there. We had a really good time. He's a really good talker. He's got a lot of knowledge. And yeah, it was just cool to delve into his world. And he's got such an awesome community there at Burley Strength at his gym. And it's just awesome to see just the passion that he's got for his sport, the powerlifting, and also his newfound love for climbing as well. So that's pretty rad. Do check out his podcast, Peak Speak. It's got the little hamburger emoji. Check it out if you want to find out more about strength training and his ideas and that of his co-host. And follow his gym, Burley Strength, and follow Shero, just Shero, JustSherro. At the same time, you can follow Baffle Days on Instagram. Head over to our website if you need a little bit more information. Flick us a message if you want to find out more little bits and pieces. We always love hearing from everyone. If you want to hear from someone in particular you reckon we should chat to, flick us a message there. But apart from that, spread the love around. Let everyone know. Tell your friends, tell your family about the Baffle Days podcast. We're trying to get the word out there, spread some awesome little stories and the knowledge that we've got in our awesome community here in Australia. Thank you so much, and we will catch you on the next episode.